and welcome to The Shipping Exchange, a brand new podcast that aims to explore the latest developments in the maritime industry, brought to you by the Honourable Company of Master Mariners and Maritime London, and presented by me, Graham Fisher. In today's episode, we're going to look at Brexit and its potential impact on the maritime industry. The UK port industry is the second largest in Europe, handling roughly 500 million tonnes of freight each year, as well as over 60 million international and domestic passenger journeys. As an island nation, the UK maritime industry handles over 95% of all imports and exports by volume, and also directly employs an estimated 152,000 people. However, following the Brexit referendum, uncertainty over the UK's future trade relationship with the EU has led to predictions of long queues at busier harbours on both sides of the Channel after Britain leaves the bloc next March. The EU says Theresa May's decision to leave the customs union single market will inevitably produce frictions to trade and necessitate customs checks, but delays could have a serious impact on the supply chain of British business. In this episode, we will look at what the possible impacts are of a no-deal Brexit, and whether Theresa May's proposal goes far enough to prevent a pile-up at the border, or could we be looking at an influx in trade to alternative ports as shipping companies seek an alternative to Dover-Calais? I'm joined today by three guests: Jos Standerwick, CEO of Maritime London; Bob Sanguinetti, CEO of the UK Chamber of Shipping; and Nick Chubb, Head of Growth at CargoMate UK. So I have a quote from David Dingle, from Head of UK, Head of Maritime UK. It says that we are lost in politics, and our message is, please, government, can you do this as quickly as possible? Because if there is no transition period, the industry as a whole will be in trouble. So, Bob, are we in trouble?
I think we're certainly facing challenging times. Our view is that the withdrawal agreement that was signed by the EU and by the UK gives businesses, and the shipping sector in particular, some breathing space. It gives it some stability and some certainty, albeit on a temporary basis. But what it does do is it enables the UK to continue to trade seamlessly with the EU, and that's vitally important in both directions as we go through the transition period. Clearly, the big unknown at the moment is what happens beyond as we work towards the future relationship between the UK and the EU. The obvious unknown is whether the deal will get through Parliament or not. The agreement as it stands will facilitate or will enable free-flowing trade between the UK and the EU in the short term, and that's something that the shipping sector welcomes.
Jos, from a Maritime London perspective and the organisations which work with Maritime London, should they be concerned about Brexit as a whole?
Brexit is something to be taken very seriously. In terms of professional services, certainly professional services in the maritime space, those regulated, if you like, so those who would be affected by a hard Brexit or a Brexit without mutual recognition, professional services, have already made contingency plans. You know, there are subsidiaries set up in the European Union. Underwriters will be able to continue to underwrite policies from European risk. Banks will be able to transact business. And markets such as the derivatives markets will be able to continue. I think the longer-term question is how we look to capitalise on Brexit, and one hopes we'll be able to discuss that in a bit more detail moving forward. But I think, just in terms of what Bob said, he's absolutely right. The one thing that the exit agreement does, in all in its 600-odd pages, is provides space for transition, and I think that's absolutely what all industries need at the moment, whilst we work out what exactly that settlement, that final agreement, will look like as we exit the European Union.
So, Nick, particularly from startup business and working with the import-export of the industry, are you concerned particularly with the notion and the idea that businesses are having to stockpile goods? You know, we're looking at 50% of the nation's food, 80% of vegetables, 30% of fresh fruit. It all comes from Europe and Ireland. So if we are having to stockpile this, it will have a huge impact.
The thing that I'm would be most keen to avoid, and I think a lot of small businesses would be keen to avoid, is getting to a point where we crash into a no deal without any kind of transition period, as Jos was saying. Potentially, if this vote on the 11th of December doesn't go through, we would be in a position where the whole of the economy could potentially be in a very, very difficult position, because we just don't know what will happen. And unless the deadline is extended or something, some other proposal gets put forward which everyone can agree on, which I highly doubt will happen, then we'll be in a position where we're potentially looking at a cliff edge. And both for businesses across the UK, but particularly for the shipping industry, that would be bad.
Do you think that there are a lot of businesses which perhaps think they don't have any sort of direct link to shipping, which in the event of a no deal or a very hard Brexit, they will have this sort of harsh reality that the supply chain, the import-export will have a knock-on effect just nationwide across all small businesses, not just those linked directly to shipping?
Well, perhaps one benefit of Brexit is that awareness of the supply chain and awareness of the shipping industry in general and the fact that a lot of our goods come from overseas has gone up. And I think the shipping industry has been put a little bit more front and centre in the debate, which is great. But I would agree with you that I think there are a lot of people and a lot of businesses that perhaps just don't realise that there are 14 million vehicle crossings bringing goods across from Europe to the UK each year and back to the continent. Those 40 million vehicles can't pass unhindered, then there will be quite serious consequences.
The largest of container vessels, which arrives in the Port Felix or Tilbury, they are so large and they carry so much goods and produce that every single person in the UK will purchase at least one item from that one shipment. We are perhaps headed for a increase in awareness of shipping, its importance on the industry. Linking it to Theresa May's Brexit proposal, I take it as we've all read it. Spent hours and hours slaving over the words.
I would admit to you having a pretty good understanding of it and its implications for the shipping sector.
Yes, and what are the implications of the shipping sector?
Well, as I said earlier on, for the transition period, trade will continue flowing as smoothly between the UK and the continent as it does at the moment, and assuming the deal is accepted, it avoids the no deal scenario. But the reality is that we have grown used to a very intricate, very complex logistics arrangement between the UK and the continent. We value the just-in-time deliveries, and we're used to things appearing on our doorstep a few hours after we've pressed click on our iPhones. So expectations would need to be managed if we somehow fell out of that arrangement, because if we introduce the sorts of checks that would be required under a new agreement, for example, customs clearance, for security and so on, the infrastructure just isn't there. The people to conduct those checks are not there. They would need to be recruited, they would need to be trained, they would need to be equipped with the right infrastructure before we're able to continue to trade in the frictionless way that we're used to. And yes, that can be done, but that would take time and that would come at a cost.
Maybe, just to add on to that, Bob, a question for both you and Nick. If there was a no-deal Brexit, how long do you think it would take until sort of pragmatism won out? Because obviously we're not only going to have queues in Dover, we're also going to have queues in Calais. And would that be acceptable to the French administration, or would there have to be some relatively quick thinking in order to sort out the logjam?
As my understanding goes, it would be quite straightforward for the UK to pass legislation that says that we will, on a sort of regulatory level, accept goods that have come from Europe. The issue comes that when on the Calais side, it's not up to Calais, it's not even up to France. The whole of the EU has to pass legislation to accept UK goods. So in one direction, potentially pragmatism could win out quite quickly. We all know that the wheels of the EU turn quite slowly. So in the other direction, I think it would take time. Mm.
I agree with that, but it's not just the legislation, it's the processes, it's the procedures that need to be implemented, and not just on the one side of the channel, but on both sides of the channel. So whether it's, for example, doing pre-customs declaration ahead of journeys, random security checks, or using automatic number plate recognition technology, right, that sort of stuff, that can all be done, but it takes time. And it can't be done unilaterally. It's going to be done across the channel, and that would take time.
It's the same sort of science and technology behind the Northern Ireland, Republic of Ireland border, you think can be applied, or the same logic with the Dover-Calais crossing? Or
Yes, similar principles, but of course there's the emotion and not the politics involved in Northern Ireland and Ireland, which go beyond the realms of shipping.
Yeah. I think the parallel between the Irish border and the border at Dover-Calais is quite interesting, because actually we don't have a lot of room for physical infrastructure at the border between Dover and Calais. So in theory, whatever we
put in place on the Irish border, if anything is put in place, the same systems could be implemented on the Dover-Calais. Mm-hmm. And people have talked a lot about the technological solutions to it. I think the technology does exist. What needs to happen is the customs bodies and the regulators need to move a bit more quickly to actually implement it and test it.
So we talk about a lack of infrastructure, and you mentioned it yourself, Bob. So even in the event that the Brexit deal is agreed in Parliament, are we still likely to face significant delays on the border because people are adapting to change, and are we still going to face problems regardless of what the outcome is?
My understanding of the withdrawal agreement is that if it is agreed by Parliament as signed by the EU and the UK, then it'll be a seamless rollover to the new interim arrangement, so we won't see any significant changes in the ports.
If an agreement isn't reached and we are in a no-deal Brexit, are we going to be having hours and hours of delays, hours and hours of queues, as you mentioned, Project Fear, as people expect? Or?
I would say the chances are we will see long delays. Much has been said about a sort of two-minute customs check on a vehicle in Dover will result in a tailback of 20-odd kilometres. There's no getting away from that. I think there are those who think, well, perhaps we could spread the load a bit more evenly and move some of the trade away from the Dover-Calais route. I'm sure that can be done logistically, but again, the reason why most of our traffic goes through that route is because that is the most efficient, the optimised route for logistics to flow between the UK and the continent. If we were to change that, and that can be changed, you know, that the freight companies, the shipping companies can do that, they can adapt, but that takes time because ships are optimised or are modified for specific berths in specific ports and so on, so you can move away from that. You'd then need the infrastructure in other ports, and there are only a small number of ports where, for example, DEFRA has inspection points for animals or for fresh provisions and so on. So it's not a simple case of just spreading the load and it'll all happen magically. It would take time. It would also require the next level of infrastructure, for example, for customs. If all these goods, all these vehicles need to go through customs clearance, the government simply does not have the personnel to do that. So whether you did that in Dover or whether you did that in five other ports, those extra people would need to be recruited, trained up and deployed to those ports. That would take time. So it can all be done, but it would be hugely disruptive. In the meantime, the waiting times for goods would have a significant effect on the manufacturing sector, on industry more generally, and on the consumer. It's no surprise that the leaders of the top four supermarkets a while ago quoted the figure, I think, 11 or 12% price hikes if we moved away from the arrangement that we see today. So in the short term, and we acknowledge that this is a temporary arrangement, it is good for industry, it is good for businesses, it is good for the consumer, and it is good for shipping, who supports the wider sectors.
So we're headed more for a case of there are possible alternatives to Dover-Calais, but the amount of time it would take to train, recruit and adapt those ports would probably be the same amount of time as it would for the Dover-Calais crossing to adjust. Either way, we would have a period of which there was chaos at the borders or long delays at the borders, you think?
Yes, I think there would be, but that let's not forget that is only one of the dimensions or one of the factors, because if you're replacing a route that takes a couple of hours from Dover to Calais with another route that takes a dozen hours between two other ports, then that clearly will impact on the delivery times. And people say, well, you can increase your delivery time and expect the goods to arrive when you've ordered them for. That's all well and good, but in a lot of the instances, we're talking about fresh provisions, perishables and so on, that have a finite shelf life. So if you start biting into that, that will impact on the businesses, on the retail sector, and clearly on the consumer at the end of the day.
While I totally appreciate what you're saying, that it's the optimum logistics route, I do think that Dover probably for too long has been the optimum logistics route. It runs very, very close to capacity anyway. Since Operation Stack was developed, where the A2 gets shut down and all the lorries get parked, I I think it's been enacted at least once a year. One of the good things that is coming out of this is that other ports on the East Coast are starting to wake up and say, well, there could be an opportunity here for us to expand or for us to start looking at putting together Ro-Ro services. So just from a national contingency point of view, having everything go through one port isn't a great idea. So potentially a good outcome of all of this could be that actually we look at taking that short sea traffic and spreading it up the East Coast a little bit more.
Bearing that in mind, with the recent report which was published by the Institute of Directors, they said that media companies have been left in the dark and unprepared when it comes to Brexit, and it's hard to blame them because simply just don't know what's going on. I mean, the government has done a lot in way of producing reports and recommendations on plans which can be put in place, but from yourself as a startup business, do you think that you have been left in the dark? Do you believe that there isn't enough clarity over what is to be expected?
Buzzword is uncertainty. I think that's probably about right. I don't think any small business really knows what is going to happen and therefore what to do. The technical notices that were published for importers and exporters, while thorough, effectively created a to-do list that is hours, if not days, long. And anyone running a small business, I don't think would want to go through that unless they absolutely have to. We're probably going to end up in a situation where we have thousands of small businesses trying to register as authorised economic operators at exactly the same time. So it'll be a little bit difficult.
But and Joss, linking that to the large companies which work with Maritime London?
I still think that even if the current bill is voted down in government, there may still be room for negotiation, because we can't underplay the cost that Brexit will have to the European Union. And we may well see pragmatism on the European side if there was to be a renegotiation before the final exit agreement is agreed. So I do still think there may be wriggle room. I think it would be best if this was voted through, and I very much hope our politicians are pragmatic and see this for what it is, and that is a transition deal to what a future relationship will look like. But if it is voted down, one hopes that the European Union may give a little bit more in terms of what they're willing to cede to us. As I said in my opening statements, companies within our membership, as I say, which particularly work within the regulated sectors of services, have already made their contingency plans. Many of them already had subsidiaries in Europe. Many of them have opened up subsidiaries in Europe. I think the biggest challenge for us is how we ensure and what is a very small decline in the British maritime services market. We're talking about very small subsidiaries in regards to the organisations that have set them up, doesn't become the start of a longer-term degradation. And that will require very close working with government to ensure that we have the most attractive business environment possible in the UK to attract shipping business when we exit the European Union.
Particularly from a seafarer perspective, a no-deal exit from the European Union, there's been some talk about the potential impacts it could have on the certification produced by the UK maritime industry and the certificates which competent officers receive. The UK will need to secure recognition by the European Commission as a third country if UK COCs are to be accepted for service. So from the training side of the maritime industry in the UK, are we going to have a period of time in which perhaps certificates aren't recognised in the same way as they are now?
Well, under the terms of the withdrawal agreement and the broad terms of the future relationship, I think there's clarity there that mutual recognition for seafarers will endure. Whether that is the case if we go through to a no-deal scenario remains to be seen. But I think we are, as shipping communities, we are so intertwined that the mutual dependence will, I think, ensure or guarantee that recognition continues. It's pointless, and there is no political or economic mileage in doing anything other than supporting each other's seafaring communities.
Just to add on to that as well, and Bob, correct me if I'm wrong here, but in terms of the UK ship register as well, I mean, the transition agreement would allow European owners to flag into the UK, which is of course incredibly important to maintain the UK register's tonnage. But also in the political settlement Whilst the section on maritime is brief, to say the least, it certainly alludes to mutual recognition for both seafarers and vessels in the what the future agreement will look like.
Because I'm in the process of renewing my ticket, so I've actually looked at this, and the government did issue a no-deal technical notice for seafarers who are have COCs or CECs with EU countries. If we end up in a no-deal scenario, if you have a CEC endorsement from an EU country, when that endorsement expires, you will potentially not be able to get another CEC. There could be a sort of lag time between the UK leaving without a deal and the European Commission recognising the UK as a sort of CEC nation. So potentially there could be a window of time, you know, potentially up to sort of a year, where it's really difficult for a UK-based seafarer to get a job on a European ship. I think it's unlikely, and as Bob says, pragmatism will prevail. And one of the great things about the shipping industry is that the conventions that we all fall under go way and over and above the EU. So, but I think if your seafarer listening and your ticket comes up in the next 12 months, it's worth just having a think about it.
Mm. So with the idea of and the thought of tickets, then historically it's always been seen as one of the most reputable flags in the world, one of the most reputable registers in the world. The Centre for Marine Insurance Brokerage is in London and is in the UK. Are we going to continue to see that post-Brexit, or are we going to see companies fleeting to Spain, Germany, France in the EU?
This is where we flip from the challenges and risks of Brexit to the opportunities that Brexit will free up. And and I'm sure Joss from the London perspective will back me up on this. But I see opportunities ahead as we move away from the EU, and if you want to use graphic language, as we unshackle ourselves from some of the bureaucracy of the EU, which is close to the core of the Brexit debate. I don't think we're going to shed vast amounts of legislation or directives, but there will be an opportunity to carry out a fresh and thorough review. See where there is flexibility in interpretation, and indeed see where there is room for new legislation, which creates a more productive and less obstructive environment for business, maritime business, to flourish. And I say that in its widest sense, from ship owners, ship management companies, to maritime-related services, that has produced the centre of maritime excellence that London is. And I think on that note, I'll hand over to Joss.
I think, yeah, just in terms of both of those points, and I completely agree with Bob. I mean, in the long term, one hopes that Brexit may allow the UK ship register to become more competitive, more liberal, open itself up to more classes of owners than it currently does. Because that is, in the long term, the only way that the UK flag will compete internationally. In terms of the UK as a maritime sector, again, I couldn't really agree with Bob more. I think there are opportunities in the long term for ourselves to make ourselves more competitive as a jurisdiction, to attract ship owning and cargo interests, an area that in the last 10 years, to be honest, we've lagged behind some of our overseas competitors. The ability to cut through some of the legislation which slows down transactional business, particularly with jurisdictions outside of the European Union. And on that note, it's worth remembering, particularly in terms of our services, we're an export-based industry. Over 80% of our products go overseas, and the European Union is not a primary consumer of those, to be honest with you, and that's not going to change either. The trend is moving eastward, and that is where our future markets will be. There are great opportunities in those jurisdictions, and that should be our focus moving forward, and the opportunity to create free trade deals that encompass maritime services is very appealing.
So looking from the perspective of yourself, Nick, leading on from what Joss has just said there, do you see a new sense of an optimism post-Brexit for areas of which you can develop your business trade with countries outside of the EU?
I think the UK is a centre of excellence for maritime, whatever happens with Brexit, that won't change. Completely agree with what Joss is saying about the number of opportunities that could come out of free trade agreements that are currently being worked on, if only in the background. Personally, I
come from the sort of maritime technology sector, and it's actually a really exciting time to be in the sector at the moment. There's a huge amount happening in tech across the world, but in the UK there are a whole load of startups being put together, solving all sorts of problems in the industry. So there's an opportunity for us to create a new maritime services sector focused just on technology, and to really take the lead there, because at the moment, although there are a few centres around the world, there isn't one single dominant player.
And Nick, if I could add to that, and not to move into one of your other podcasts, I'm sure, but we had Maritime London during the last Posidonia did a Brexit seminar. It was incredibly encouraging how the Greek shipowning community viewed London and the UK, but also were very keen to explore opportunities in terms of having a base in the UK post-Brexit. That was clarified even more by the fact that the Greek Union of Shipowners, post-Posidonia, released a press release saying that their members were actively looking at the UK as a jurisdiction to base themselves post-Brexit. It quickly became apparent amongst the panellists and within the audience that the general perception was, in the long term, Brexit was not insignificant, but certainly not the biggest challenge that the UK maritime sector faces. It will be very much how we embrace new technologies and how what is a very established market adapts to digitization, blockchain, etc., which will begin to fundamentally alter the way in which we conduct maritime business. And I thought that was quite telling, actually.
I think if I could add to that by saying that the other challenge that shipping globally and the UK in particular would be facing over the coming years is from the IMO strategy to decarbonise the environment and meet very, very ambitious targets by the middle of the century. That there is no doubt that we will not achieve those targets without a massive revolution in technology, and I think the UK is extremely well placed with government leading, but with the private sector working very closely together, and by that I include the shipping community, the research and development fraternity, academia, and industry, manufacturing industry more generally, coming together to cut a way through the technology that we know is needed, which would place the UK in the lead rather than playing second fiddle to one of our European neighbours, as we've seen in the past. And that would have a massive advantage not just to the UK shipping industry, but to UK PLC more widely, because it's technology that will be transferable across the piece. And we've seen significant investment and interest recently in electric batteries for cars and so on. We need to see similar enthusiasm, similar application and commitment to the maritime sector.
I think if Brexit has done one thing positive for the UK maritime is its government has become much starker in its focus around the maritime sector and much more proactive in supporting us and understanding the concerns and a willingness to examine what the changes that need to be made are to ensure that we maintain our presence as a world-leading maritime nation. And, you know, we can point to various things to back that up, whether it be the Maritime 2050 strategy, the Clean Maritime Council, which has recently been set up, Maritime London are about to commission a competitiveness study, all the work that the UK Chamber's done in and around making tonnage tax a more competitive regime. I think all of these things are very positive and point to that much closer collaboration between government and industry, which, to be honest, in an increasingly competitive maritime environment can only be welcomed.
So essentially it's not as doom and gloom as it's portrayed in the media, then, as you say, there's an opportunity for us, or the industry as a whole, to succeed post-Brexit.
I think in the long term, there are an awful lot of opportunities. I think it will be really interesting to see if we get a transition period, how that plays out, if you like. I have gone through the political settlement, and, of course, what it's very broad and very aspirational, I think, which I suppose in a way is no bad thing because it means you've got a lot to play for, but also it doesn't give us much of an idea as to where we're going to end up. And that's where industry's sort of role comes in, really, to give government, or continue to give government, a very clear steer as to where we believe we should end up at the end of that transition agreement.
So you mentioned about the transition agreement. Is one of the thoughts is that it can take up to at least 3 years for new customs systems to be developed, including IT, retraining of staff and the new infrastructure, which links to what you said, Bob. So in the event of a no deal, and again, linking back to the maritime industry, you believe that there are bigger problems, bigger developments that we should be focusing on the maritime industry, and Brexit is not as critical?
Yeah. No, I would say in the short term, Brexit is the focus. Is a focus, but of course not exclusively, and the subjects we've just been discussing in terms of the environment and developing the shipping sector more widely are extremely relevant. But I do see this as a fleeting opportunity. We don't quite know how long Brexit is going to go on for, but I'd like to think it won't go on for forever. But the opportunities it presents in terms of policy review and sharpening up our industry and creating a more forward-looking and a more business-friendly environment, that opportunity will not be around forever. So we need to make sure that we identify and seize those opportunities and exploit those opportunities. And at the same time, in parallel, regarding the environmental issues that we've talked about, going through the global sulphur cap in 2020 as a step towards decarbonisation more generally in the longer term. The clock is ticking, and when you consider how long it's taken for example, LNG to be adopted as a fuel of preference, we don't have that long to go before we need to start designing the propulsion systems, the engines and so on that will power our ships in the next 30, 40 years or so. So we need to work very closely together. I echo very strongly what Josh said earlier on about the close working relationship that the shipping sector enjoys with government, and not just with Department for Transport, but much more widely all the relevant departments that have a stake in making UK maritime sector even stronger than it is today.
I think I'd just add to that by saying that in my experience, people I've spoken to over the last few months, parking short sea ports and ship operators, when you look at sort of ocean going, 2020, the sulphur cap is a far bigger worry than Brexit. No one, talk about uncertainty again, no one really knows what's going to happen on Jan 1st, 2020. Mm.
So one of the other points which has been mentioned is the prospect of new trade agreements. Should the UK industries or the maritime industry be concerned about perhaps the quality or the origin of goods, which could have a knock-on effect on other industries? Or should it be seen more as an opportunity for newer investments, newer technologies, newer sources of produce, new trade?
I would say the latter point. I think we mustn't forget that the shipping industry is there in support of industry more widely. On the subject of striking new trade deals, again, I see that as an opportunity. And touching on a point that Joss raised, when you consider that 80% of economic growth for the next 30 years or so is likely to take place in some of the developing countries in Southeast Asia, in South America, in Africa, the possibility of striking trade deals, creating economic prosperity in those areas, and seeing more traffic being shipped across the globe can only work to our advantage, and if we create the right environment as we go through Brexit. So I see that very much as a positive note.
Absolutely. One thing we can't lose sight of, Brexit or no Brexit, is global trade will grow and continue to grow. And markets will continue to adapt and primary markets will continue to change. And the most important thing in the long term is that the UK understands those trends and has an ability to capitalise on them. And that has to be, you know, the fundamental piece of work that all of us must aspire to.
So I've recently co-authored a report on new technology and how it can aid frictionless trade post-Brexit. And one of the interesting things that came out of that was the opportunity for free ports. So effectively creating an area that is legally outside the UK's customs territory, although geographically within it. So, for example, around a port. At the moment, we can't really do that
because of state aid rules and because of the customs territory rules. But in theory, if we're outside of the European Union, we could do that. And actually, that's a really interesting opportunity to create sort of clustered environments around ports, to bring in manufacturing, smart manufacturing, to bring in new service businesses. You could get quite creative with the legislation and the tax incentives. Couple that with really looking outwards and striking free trade deals with other nations outside of the EU, and potentially there's a real opportunity to, yes, help the shipping industry, but also revive a whole load of other industries.
So just as a final thought then, what do you think the state of the shipping industry, the UK maritime industry, will be in March, come the time that we leave the European Union, and over the next sort of coming months, coming years?
I very much hope that a transition deal will be approved, and so we will move into a position where we are outside of the EU, but actually not much has changed in terms of our trading relationship, whether that be in goods or services, with the European Union. And then, as I think we've all said, we use that transition period to really analyse where we can capitalise on not being within the European Union to the benefit of the UK maritime.
Bob, what are your predictions, or the predictions of the Chamber, of how the industry might be shaped over the next couple of months post-Brexit?
Well, I think it all depends on the deal being voted through Parliament. If it is, then shipping or trade will continue to flow comfortably, seamlessly between the UK and the EU. If it doesn't go through, then I can't speculate any more than much better qualified, better placed politicians who've been interviewed over the last few days. But it'll be an extremely challenging backdrop indeed if we end up with the no deal scenario, because I think we will all lose both on the UK side and across the channel in the EU. I would like to think that it won't come to that. That will come at a price, and at the end of the day, it's businesses, it's a consumer who will end up footing the bill. I stress, not just in the UK, but in the EU.
If we can't get it right as a government, or in the European Union, or getting the deal through Parliament, what is the biggest worry, the biggest impact that it could have on the UK?
I think we will be facing disruption, delays and chaos that would apply facing eastwards towards the continent and facing westwards towards Ireland. It's as simple as that, which will take some time to resolve, address and work around.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's no doubt that there would be huge amounts of disruption if there was a no deal. However, I don't think we should lose sight of the resilience and the inherent strength of the maritime sector in the UK. And whilst in the short term it's going to be painful, I still think those opportunities remain in the long term for us to create a stronger maritime sector.
Nick, do you think that we then are headed for a period in which people are just going to be completely shocked by the impact that it will have?
I think one of the things that's important to remember is that it's not just the shipping industry that will be affected. Any regulated industry where stuff or people move across from the UK to the EU and back again will be affected. So yes, I think there will be if it's no deal, there will be a massive impact on trade through Dover. No doubt about that at all, at least in the first instance. But then you've also got to look at the aviation industry and what will happen there, the medicine industry. There's a whole load of other industries that could be adversely affected by no deal, not just shipping.
What can companies, other than the stockpiling, which has been reported quite heavily in the media, what can small companies, big companies as well, do to prepare for the likelihood or the event of a no-deal Brexit?
I'll caveat my answer by saying seek advice from someone far more informed than I. But I would say read in detail the relevant technical notices. And if you're an importer and exporter, particularly the importers and exporters technical notice, and register as a authorised economic operator as soon as possible, and get your economic operator number and all that sort of thing set up. I would definitely recommend. I don't think we're at the stage yet where people necessarily need to, small businesses at least, need to stockpile, but I do think we're at the stage where a contingency plan should be put in place, and seek advice from someone far more intelligent than me.
Thank you for listening to The Shipping Exchange. We hope you enjoyed the show.
And if you did, it would be great if you could leave us a comment and subscribe for future episodes. You can also find us across all of social media and at our website, and the links can be found below in the bio. And we hope that you can join us again soon.